Southwest Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner denied Monday that he has anything to do in any proper context with Russia leading up to the 2016 election.
Let me be very clear. I did not collude with Russia, nor do I know of anyone else in the campaign who did so.
The president's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr., and former campaign manager Paul Manafort are also sharing information with another panel. That's the Senate Judiciary Committee. In a written statement issued before his appearance on Capitol Hill, Kushner confirmed that he, the younger Trump and Manafort, met with a Russian lawyer and other figures tied to Moscow last June, but asserted he arrived late to the meeting and heard no discussions of the presidential campaign. At least 35 people have been killed in a Taliban car bombing, with dozens more injured in the Afghan capital Kabul. An Interior Ministry spokesman, while confirming the casualties, explained that Obama rammed his explosives-laden vehicle into a minibus packed with civilian government workers in the western part of the city. The blast took place while the bus was passing through a crowded marketplace, inflicting casualties on shopkeepers and passers-by, according to eyewitnesses. In Pakistan, a suspected suicide bomber in the eastern city of Lahore has killed at least 26 people and wounded around 50 others. Monday's attack occurred in a busy marketplace where local administration workers were trying to remove illegal makeshift shops near government buildings. Citing security concerns, police were escorting the workers to deter protesters. The Pakistani Taliban has claimed responsibility for the violence. This is VOA News. U.S. President Donald Trump is ramping up pressure on Republicans to pass a new health care law, saying there's been enough talk but no action. Speaking in the White House Blue Room Monday, Mr. Trump scolded Senate Republicans, saying they've not kept their promise to repeal and replace the current health care law, also known as Obamacare, championed by former President Barack Obama.
Tomorrow, the Senate will vote on whether to allow this urgently needed bill to come to the Senate floor for debate. The question for every senator, Democrat or Republican, is whether they will side with Obamacare's architects, which have been so destructive to our country, or with its forgotten victims.
Mr. Trump tore into Obamacare's with fresh intensity, calling it government takeover of health care and a big, fat, ugly lie that wreaked havoc on American families. Venezuelans are tensing for a national strike this week aimed at pressuring President Nicolas Maduro to cancel Sunday's controversial election of a constituent assembly to rewrite the country's constitution. Venezuelans scrambled to lay in already sparse supplies ahead of the strike. Falling oil prices and government mismanagement have led to critical shortages of food, medicine, and other basic goods in what was once Latin America's wealthiest country. The U.S. military says it's preparing to conduct another test of a missile defense system put in place to counter threats from North Korea. A Pentagon spokesman, Navy Captain Jeff Davis, said Monday that the test of the military's Terminal High Altitude Area Defense in the far northwestern state of Alaska is scheduled to go ahead soon. He said the test is a routine measure to make sure the system is ready. The United Nations envoy for the Middle East peace process is urging a quick resolution to the current crisis around a mosque, also known as the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. The envoy talked to reporters following closed-door discussions with the UN Security Council members.
I ask member states to use their influence with all sides in order to encourage them to de-escalate and to ensure that while security is provided for worshippers and visitors to the holy sites in Jerusalem, the status quo that has been established since 1967 is preserved for all.
Envoy Nikolai Mladenov says the tensions have risen over the past few weeks between Israelis and Palestinians after Israel installed metal detectors and security cameras at the hotel holy site after two Israeli policemen were shot to death there by three Palestinian workers. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambian President Adamawa Barrow renews his pledge to preserve the freedom and dignity of the Gambians.
The most important achievement so far is the peaceful transition of power to our new democracy. This short period has seen the inauguration of a president, the appointment of a new cabinet, and the election of a new national assembly.
West Africa takes steps to tackle statelessness. Liberia's Elections Commission releases a new provisional candidates list for the October election. Zimbabwe's opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai dismisses rumors that he has only 6 months to live. And Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party expels one of its members of parliament.
The kind of insults that keep flowing from his mouth directed at the president shows that indeed he was a bad seed, shows that indeed he was a cancer that has been amputated at the right time.
Frank Bualia is the Deputy General Secretary of Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party, and a well-known South Sudan politician says she has reconciled with President Salva Kiir. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gambian President Adamawa Barrow on Monday used his State of the Nation address to the National Assembly to renew his pledge to guard and preserve the freedom and dignity of the Gambian people. Seni Marina reports from Banjul.
In his median State of Nation address, the Gambian new leader who succeeded former longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh said the Gambia will never return to those dark days of impunity, disregard for constitutional order, and international isolation.
Never again shall this nation return to those dark days of impunity, obvious disregard of constitutional order, or be globally isolated. This is an achievement that we should not take lightly. I thank Allah for this blessing and also seek his continued guidance and strength to serve you well in the coming years. The spirit of unity that brought us last December's historic election outcome continues to drive the nation forward, which is evident in the business of our new cabinet. We see the spirit of unity every day across the nation as we strive together to build the new Gambia that we want.
The president said the task ahead is to reconcile Gambians and fix the broken system damaged by Jammeh regime, which is accused of committing cross human rights violations.
The most important achievement so far is the peaceful transition of power to our new democracy. This short period has seen the inauguration of a president, the appointment of a new cabinet, and the election of a new national assembly. Fellow Gambians, you have elected the government that you want, and we have taken your expression of goodwill and your desire for peace and prosperity seriously. We have just begun the task of steadily reforming the government machinery so it can do the work of nation building and help strengthen our newfound democracy that we wanted for so long.
After the president's State of Nation address, VOA sounded the opinion of some prominent Gambians within the opposition and coalition government about their reaction to the president's speech. A former Jammeh lawmaker in the previous government, Mama Kande, is the leader of the opposition Gambia Democratic Congress.
The statement is well read and is well understood, and I'm sure we all have to give them the chance to push this country forward. So I have no problem with this statement.
For the Minister of Culture and Tourism, Hamad Ba, the president's address is pertinent, and all hands must be on deck to drive the new Gambia agenda.
President, as he promised, he will deliver transparently through accountability and will not disappoint the Gambians, and he will work for the supreme interest of the Gambian people. And I have no doubt that the will God gave them and the support that God gave us in this process of transformation will not be disappointed. And they will not be disappointed. Inshallah, he will deliver to their expectation.
Meanwhile, Amul Nyasi, an opposition lawmaker, has a different reaction to President's speech.
Because all he said is about what is going to develop the Gambia. He didn't say anything that is contrary to the Gambia's development. So my reaction actually would be positive. Of course, here and there during the debate, we will need clarification on certain areas.
It is a constitutional requirement for the president to annually address the National Assembly and the people of the Gambia and highlight his government project and plan for the current and ensuing year. The opening of the legislative year will also pave the way for the introduction of new bills and laws from the government as well as private entities. Reporting for VOA News in Banjul, I am Seni M.K. Marina.
Liberia's National Elections Commission on Monday released a new provisional candidates listing for the October 10 presidential and parliamentary election. The Supreme Court last week ordered the commission to include the vice presidential candidates of two political parties who had been rejected because they did not resign their government positions 2 years earlier, in line with the country's code of conduct. The court also set new standards by which the commission should consider candidates. Elections Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya says the new list includes candidates who qualify to run for office under the court's new interpretation of the code of conduct.
The second set of names you saw today are those that were processed in the 10 additional days. And most of them, of course, include other people who had just resigned, some of them a couple of weeks back, and who took advantage of the decision of the court, which provides a set of distinction between substantial compliance and egregious violation of the law of the court.
So, Mr. Chairman, you are saying your commission accepted new candidates following this Supreme Court ruling of last week?
I don't know if you call it new candidates. Some of them had applied originally, but the commission could not certify them because at the time we thought they were in violation, and because the court was already considering the issue, we didn't think they were proper to keep rejecting or keep making decisions which were eventually necessitated that they are going back to the court. And so when the court came out, I set up a clear standard, and then those people, though not very new, but they were not formally processed, and then we just went back and then considered them.
So under normal circumstances, your commission would never have accepted some of the candidates, because if I'm correct, some of these candidates resigned their government positions as recently as this week.
Yes, you are correct. If the court had not set the standard, we probably would not have accepted them. But in this Harrison Conway case, the court set a clear standard that removed all the difficulties in respect to what to be done. So giving that standard and applying that standard, additional people got qualified who probably would not have been qualified without the standard.
When you said the court had not set standards, you mean when the court required your commission to grant due process to each applicant, is that right?
No, not necessarily. The court categorized violation in two ways. First, those people who resigned at some point, either before the posting case or after the posting case, or before they submitted their request to the commission. The court considered those people to be in substantial compliance. They were in violation, but at least their violation was not egregious. The next set of definition had to do with the egregious violation. And these are people who remain in their appointed position and apply to the election commission for participation in the election. Those people, the court defined and categorized and are being egregiously in violation of the court. And for those people, the commission will be justified in rejecting them outrightly.
Soon after the Supreme Court ruling, you were concerned about the possibility of the elections calendar falling behind. So where are you? Are you on schedule, for example, in terms of closing nomination and releasing your final voter list?
If we do not have a lot of cases traveling to the Supreme Court, we will be on target. That is, we expect to open campaign on the 31st and then have the final list up on the 31st and then announce the final register on the 28th. So we will be announcing the final register on the 28th of July.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of Liberia's Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 25th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. West Africa recently became the first region in the world to develop an action plan to tackle statelessness. According to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, there could be more than 1 million people in West Africa who are stateless. UNHCR stateless expert Emmanuel Amiti talked to Ricky Stryak about how the region came to create an action plan and what challenges statelessness present.
We brought them together, but there was also a state that which had a leadership role in the process. That is Côte d'Ivoire. Côte d'Ivoire has been fighting against statelessness for many years now. Indeed, statelessness is a very important and crucial problem in Côte d'Ivoire, as it's one and maybe the most important cause of the civil war in Côte d'Ivoire. At some point, it was evaluated that almost 1 million people didn't have a nationality in Côte d'Ivoire. Now the figure is about 700,000, which is still very important.
When you say Côte d'Ivoire acted as a leader, in what capacity did they gather everyone together and what kind of actions are being taken?
Well, they did not gather everyone together, but ECOWAS and UNHCR did. But the conference was hosted by Côte d'Ivoire, and so they were Côte d'Ivoire was a partner, and President Ouattara came to the conference. He opened the conference and he delivered a brilliant speech where he underlined the importance for Côte d'Ivoire but also for the region to fight against statelessness. And other states agreed.
And can I ask you about the most recent developments, which I think would be the meeting in Gambia that happened? What kind of progress was made at this gathering, and what are you guys looking toward in the future?
Well, first of all, this gathering was 2 years after Abidjan Declaration, where all of the states committed themselves to fight against statelessness. So 2 years later, they came back together in Banjul and they discussed about the progress. But they also discussed about or agreed upon the need to have more detailed documents and the Abidjan Declaration that will guide their action towards the eradication of statelessness. So Abidjan Declaration, I would say, is a political declaration. So it's not legally binding. And in Abidjan, they declare their will to eradicate statelessness. In Banjul, they take concrete action because they agreed to adopt a plan of action, and they agreed that this plan of action will be legally binding. And indeed, it was adopted as such by the Council of Ministries. That happened a few weeks later in Liberia.
Emmanuel Amiti is a UNHCR stateless expert. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Zambia's ruling party, Patriotic Front, has expelled one of its members of parliament, Chishimba Kambwili. But Kambwili, who is the former information minister, has described her expulsion as illegal. The decision to expel Kambwili was made during the party's central committee meeting chaired by President Edgar Lungu. Kambwili had walked out of the meeting, calling it a kangaroo court. Kambwili had announced he would challenge President Lungu for the party's presidential nomination in the 2021 general election. Frank Bualia, Deputy General Secretary for the ruling party, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the former information minister was disrespectful to the party's central committee members during the meeting.
The former minister has been engaging in activities to destabilize the party. In his own constituency and the district of Luansha, our party structures have been failing to perform due to his divisive character, thereby making it very difficult for the elected structures to smoothly run the party and continue to mobilize.
But for the Bualia, why wouldn't the party at least caution him before taking the extreme step of expelling him from the party? In any case, he's a founding member of the party.
The last time he was in the news, and not a long time ago, he was in the news for wrong reasons. that was being strongly reprimanded by the party through a strong written reprimand. So he's not somebody who has not been cautioned. He's not somebody who has not been warned before. And this is why the party decided to take this decision. I should also add that during that meeting, he showed a certain level of indiscipline that none of us at this supreme organ of the party would tolerate by walking out on the meeting chaired by our leader, the leader of the party, President Edgar Chagwarungu. He walked out, leaving the room in a manner that was clearly arrogant and highly disrespectful of party authority.
Now, Father Bwalya, he says his expulsion is illegal.
That is what he's saying, that his expulsion is illegal, but he knows in his heart that there was no illegality in the manner his case was handled. If he truly believes that the expulsion was illegal, then he can have recourse to the courts and put the evidence before them, in which case, if indeed he thinks it was illegal, he should get a desired outcome.
Some people are saying that his expulsion is an indication that President Edgar Chagwarungu is intolerant of dissent within the party and that his criticisms of the party has led to his expulsion, which they said really flies in the face, an affront to the internal democracy of the Patriotic Front, of which he is a founding member. What do you say to that?
This is not a decision that was made by one man, His Excellency President Edgar Chagwarungu. He was the chairperson of the meeting, and he led the proceedings. He animated the meeting. The decision was made by the Central Committee. And President Lungu is a person who is highly tolerant to divergent views.
Frank Bwalya is the Deputy General Secretary of Zambia's ruling party, the Patriotic Front. He spoke to viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai has dismissed rumors that he has only 6 months to live as fake news peddled by his political rivals ahead of the 2018 elections. Tsvangirai, who leads one of the opposition movement for democratic change formations, is currently undergoing treatment for colon cancer. Rumors have been circulating in online publications and social media that his medical team had given him a few months to live. But in this exclusive interview with reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA's Studio 7 program, Tsvangirai says he is responding well to treatment and is surprised by rumors that he is bedridden and in a vegetative state.
You know, I'm undergoing treatment, and it's not a new thing. The only surprising thing is when people blow out of proportion and the mistaken treatment for a death sentence, you know, it's inhuman to conclude that. I'm feeling fine. I'm responding well. It takes time. But as you know, all treatments have a process. That's how I feel. All this talk about I'm going to die in 6 months, I'm bedridden, I'm garbage. Those who are coming here on a daily basis to visit me here and engage with me know the state of health I am. In fact, they are shocked by the misrepresentation. But I know this misrepresentation is intended to create a certain impression that Tsvangirai is not able to go to the next election because of health reasons. They want to make my health an election issue. And unfortunately, they will not succeed.
So Mr. Tsvangirai is raring to go come 2018?
Well, we have always had to go. We have already been working for the last 2-3 years. We have been working to try to rebuild our capacity to be the alternative.
And just tell us briefly about that campaign. How is it going for your party?
Well, I think we've laid down a number of phases. Phase one, we went out there to meet opinion leaders. Phase two, we're driving the agenda to the ward level. Phase three, we are now creating polling station-based activities, recruitment. And we are also focusing on the next voter registration exercise, which is coming, and ensuring that we maximize the registration of voters. Of course, you look at the manner in which there are biases that are trying to be introduced. But anyway, we'll see as we go.
And how about a coalition for the opposition? We note that Zimbabwe now has more than 60 opposition political parties.
I don't know where you get the number 60, but at the end of the day, what is a political party? A political party is not an individual. It is an institution. And with my interaction with other political parties, I have noticed that there are people who say they are political parties when they're just individuals. But what we are saying is that there is need for people to have a coalition because we want to institutionalize the fact that the vote that people will take away from ZANU adds to, not subtract to, MDC regular vote.
You had said July 31 is the deadline, at least, to have come up with a coalition of some sort. How is it going?
It's going well. We are targeting that, and we are finalizing that. We are going to have an alliance agreement and announce the alliance with the parties that we have negotiated with. And we are not closing the door. We are saying anyone who wants to join the alliance is free to do so. We are also saying that we need to have an agreement around the policy areas, the agenda for change and transformation that we are looking at. We are also looking at the issue of governance framework. So all those takes time. It's not just a question of signing an MOU. It's a question of negotiating the substantive areas of agreement. So I'm hoping that by next week, we will have finalized and they will then announce within the next week or two.
Monkey Shangra is leader of Zimbabwe's opposition movement for democratic change. He was speaking from Harare with reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA's Studio 7 program. A well-known South Sudanese politician says she has reconciled with President Salva Kiir. Rebecca Nyanden says she met with President Kiir last week in Kampala and that the two of them agreed to seek a solution to South Sudan's political crisis. But Nyanden says despite her new relationship with President Kiir, she will only return to South Sudan when all the political forces in the country are reunited.
It was President Salva Kiir who asked for reconciliation between me and him, and we did that before President Museveni. But we have seen that reconciliation between me and him. For me, I say that we don't have any problem. Our problem is how we can rescue people of South Sudan. And already President Museveni was working on the SPLM reunification. All these are search for peace, because things are getting from bad to worse in South Sudan. So it needs all of us to come together so that we can see how we can mend the fence. The question here is, how do we rescue South Sudan? That was the question that I asked myself.
And what was the answer to that question from the people who were present at the meeting, the former detainees, President Kiir, and the Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni? What was the answer to that question?
Everybody realized that the problem is there in the country, and we need to rescue our country. But it does not need only a few people. It needs everybody to be included. So all of us have agreed. But we need to start from somewhere. Like now, we have to start like this. And then the rest of the thing will be done by President Museveni.
I understand that there was a talk about reunifying the SPLM, the ruling party. Is that what you are going to work with President Kiir and the former detainees?
We had the first meeting with President Museveni. This question came, how do we rescue South Sudan? And when the former detainees went to Entebbe, it came as the SPLM reunification. Why is the Arusha agreement was not implemented? If we are talking about the SPLM reunification, there is no problem about the SPLM reunification. And there were signatories to the Arusha agreement. So we brought this thing to our attention, that, and everybody has agreed, why is the Arusha agreement was not implemented? So there is nothing that we say the reunification. We have already identified the problem. If you can see, the side which near reunification is the IO, which is divided now, and they were part of the Arusha.
When I looked at the pictures, there was no representative from Riek Machar's party. Was there any communication with Riek Machar regarding the meeting in Kampala?
The meeting which is being conducted by President Museveni is coming on the 27th. This one was between me and President Salva, and then also we have included FDs. So it is us, and we realize that we only me and President Salva and FDs will not resolve the problem of South Sudan. We have to look at the bigger picture.
That was Rebecca Nyanden, widow of South Sudan's founding father, John Garang. She was speaking to reporter John Tanza from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. And that is it for this Tuesday, July 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butter saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Rwanda's August 4th presidential election. Incumbent Paul Kagame is widely expected to win another term. The amended constitution allows him to remain in power until 2034 if he pursues it. A preview of Rwanda's presidential election.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.